Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a podcast and podcast show that brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from thousands of successful individuals from around the world. I am your host, Ashutosh Garg, and today I'm delighted to welcome a very, very young and accomplished fashion designer, expert, marketer from New Delhi, India, Mr. Arjun Duggal. Arjun, welcome to the show.
Hi, Ashutosh. Thank you so much for having me. It's incredible to be a part of this platform. You guys have grown so beautifully and organically. And for me, it's honestly a privilege to be here.
Thank you so much. Arjun is the CEO and creative head of Arjun Duggal and Simar Duggal. So Arjun, let me start by asking you that from the world of finance and economics to the world of high-end fashion, tell me about this incredible journey that you've had at such a young age.
So the journey has been, it's been very interesting, definitely, from numbers and finance to a world of, you know, creative. It's been a transition, but nevertheless, a much needed one. Mm-hmm. Because I do feel that at the core of every business, powers like economics and finance, particularly finance, mm-hmm. are always going to be a core competence of anyone running the business. And particularly for designers, I feel like we are so creatively inclined. But when it comes to the business side of things, we have to be equally good in order to sustain. Because at the end of the day, it might be a creative endeavor, but the business side of it cannot be underrated. Right? So having a core understanding of business definitely improves my understanding of my vision of where I see the brands.
And what brought you into the world of fashion?
So actually, it's more of a generational thing. In a way, I'm a third generation person, a third generation into the industry of fashion. Mm-hmm. We've sort of scoped out all different avenues. My dad works in finished leather garment. Mm-hmm. He's an exporter. My mom was, of course, a model to begin with. Yep. And that piqued her interest in fashion. Mm-hmm. And post that, sort of I joined her when I came back from college. I was working with my dad as from the export run and handling production. I was working with my mom as actually her storekeeper. I was literally from the ground level up.
Yeah.
So I learned from there how the business side of things are managed. So that's what got me into fashion.
Absolutely. And
actually, in college, I was usually perpetually broke, not because of my lack of allowance, but because of my desire to just buy clothes and put it together.
Yeah. And your mom was quite an icon. So let's now talk about your two brands, Arjun Duggal and Simar Duggal. Tell me about how do you differentiate between these two brands and how easy or difficult is it to manage two different brands?
I think the latter half of the question, how difficult is it to manage two different brands? It can be easy or hard depending on how aesthetically similar they might be. Mm. But in this case, Arjun Duggal and Simar Duggal are completely opposite. One, the Arjun Duggal, the menswear as men's fashion has progressed, it still stays with an undercurrent of minimalism. Men don't like to be out there with their fashion. They love something fashionable, but they don't want to be out there with their fashion. But women, on the other hand, a lot more complicated. We've got a lot of work and layers and layers and layers of work that go into creating a single women's garment. Today, my customer is so spoiled for choice. So finding and creating and digging deeper into that USP and that aesthetic is something that is going to be a differentiator. But working with two different brands individually is quite taxing, particularly because the creative vision for both are very different.
Correct.
Luckily for me, I feel Arjun Duggal is a brand that I started. So understanding what I want and what I don't want takes a quarter of the time that it does for a Simar Duggal, which was my inherited brand.
Correct.
So every time I look at something, I say, okay, is this something that goes with the vision that my mom had? And then is it a vision that I have? Then is it aesthetically pleasing? Does it go in the price bracket? Does it represent us adequately? So all those questions come in. So it's a little topsy-turvy, but it is a lot of fun.
Amazing. And as you just mentioned, when a customer is spoiled for choice, what goes into building a top fashion brand like, and you have two of them?
So I wish I knew the answer to that in its entirety.
Absolutely.
But I have learned a few things along the way. I think we underrate the basic aspect of a business. One being caring for your customer. I'm not selling clothes per se. I'm selling the feeling of what those clothes do to the person wearing them. And then that photo is going to be in their photo album 20 years from now. That's what I'm selling. I'm selling a feeling. So understanding and caring for your customer is, I think, absolutely prime. The second aspect I see as the as this business evolves, I mean, we had 2 years of the pandemic in the middle, and post which we saw a lot of smaller mid-range brands go out of the business. And then we've seen a few more flood in. But I do feel over time, the differentiating factor is going to be that X factor in quality. Quality is going to be play an imperative role in the success of a brand going forward as well. And the third thing I would say is staying very true to your vision. Whether some people like it, some people don't, you can't cater to everyone's interests, but understanding who you are and what you like and having that trust in yourself to improve on your vision, that's very important. And the last thing I would say is word of mouth marketing and patience does what Instagram and social media can never do. So I feel that's a key element in making the brand, particularly since it's a lot of brick and mortar and groundwork that has to go into it.
Well said. Arjun, tell me, you know, since you are a relatively younger entrepreneur, what have been some of your early challenges as you have been building out your brands?
So there were several, of course. And speaking as of right now, I think there's a couple of them that, like, for example, there's one of them that I faced initially, and I do feel that I will always face this, is to find and retain good people through all levels, from the grassroots, from labor to admin to the higher senior level management. Good employees in a company, I feel, are never overestimated. They will build your vision for you. The second was that I didn't really pay attention to cash flow management at the point in time. And also I was a smaller entity. So I had very bad payment terms from vendors at the time. Because we were buying in smaller quantities, we would get the higher prices and we would get lack of credit. So cash flow was usually a crunch. And I didn't particularly invest in a great accountant at the time. Even though I do come from a finance background, my set of skills was, you know, primarily diverted to the creative aspect.
Correct.
So because of that, we had a little bit of those issues. And understanding and planning and creating a vision that of what I wanted without any experience in the business whatsoever was a little bit of a challenge for me, because I would always second guess myself. Is this where I want it to be? And of course, as much faith as you have in your product, despite that, your external accolade, your external recognition will far supersede what you feel about it. And of course, managing quality
absolutely
was a big issue, particularly being from a garment background.
Amazing. So let me now move to some more generic topics of fashion, and then we'll come back a little bit more back to both your brands. You've spent a few years, you know, the last whatever 14, 15, 20 years in the fashion business. How has this entire fashion and apparel industry evolved from your perspective?
So I feel maybe 15 years down, 20 years ago, fashion was relevant. But today it has become exponentially more relevant in your daily household. Indian fashion has become considerably more of a status symbol, particularly because of the forerunners in the industry, like a Sabya Sachi, who has reformed what Indian fashion could mean to the world. Earlier, there were very few designers and very well-known ones. But now there are so many more. that has then each one has its own USP.
Correct.
So there has been it's beautiful actually to see, because you have certain brands that celebrate certain aspects of India. Mm. Some celebrate like the Ikat fabric or the Patola fabric, and they exclusively do that. So it's again, they're promoting their local weavers as well as creating high street fashion under the bracket. And you have all over, like you have specialized embroiderers and weavers in Banaras who are now doing really well for themselves because of this. And because the market has grown and grown, weddings have really picked up, and the business is actually supposed to double in the next 4 years.
Wow.
So the number of people coming into the industry is a lot more. Western culture initially had a very heavy influence in India.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result of which, the majority of our creme de la creme, so to speak, of workforce was diverted to the export business, where there was scope to make one's living.
Mm-hmm.
But now, as families also see that, you know, designer and clothing, the industry is becoming so much bigger,
mm-hmm.
that there's a lot of scope for earning over there. You mm-hmm. also get better workforce working for you. NIFT has done a phenomenal job in understanding and growing and nurturing talent right from, you know, post the 12th grade,
mm-hmm.
doing their college, which has been great.
Yeah.
Also, the apparel industry has seen a lot of technological advances in certain areas, mm-hmm. like blending and making of new fabrics.
Mm-hmm.
So today we have certain blends of silk, which are not exorbitantly expensive, but they give you the same feel and touch.
Mm-hmm.
So the designer today has a lot more creative ability to create more silhouettes
mm-hmm.
With regard to certain body types and with regard to certain preferences that we mm-hmm. understand, which were not there in the past 4 decades.
Mm-hmm.
So the ability to expand and grow your designs is a lot more today than what it was earlier.
Mm-hmm. And yet, Arjun, when I think about it, fashion is so, you know, it's constantly changing. You know, and every time I've been overseas, you know, you see a different set of fashions in spring, summer, autumn, winter, everything else. How do you, as the creative head, keep ahead of the trends?
So this is always an interesting question. So the interesting part is, for example, you're wearing a gray jumper. I'm wearing a gray jumper.
Mm.
The gray jumper is something that's always going to be in fashion.
Correct.
In a particular way. But the way the weave is done, or the way the little textures created are so different. So fashion in its innate nature is cyclical in a way. We just went through a phase about 2 years ago where the 1920s fashion was back in town. And like after the release of the movie, The Great Gatsby, you would see a lot of Great Gatsby parties happening and a lot more people dressing up in that era. But to trend a collection, we're in spring summer 2023 right now, but we already have an idea what we want to do for spring summer 2024.
Oh wow!
We do that with the help of a lot of trend forecasters. We have a color of the year that comes out with Pantone that takes out the color of the year. So we like to experiment with the color of the year, the trends, the forecasting. What colors are supposed to be in, what are out, what are quintessentially spring. So there's a lot of trend setting that goes on, and there's a lot of trend forecasting that goes on. At the same time, you have to understand what your vision is for what you put out into the world. And you take that trend or those colors, and you amalgamate it with your vision of what you are known for.
Mm-hmm.
So you amalgamate your USP and you amalgamate what the trends are, and you come out with a totally interesting product, which is something that has not been really seen per se.
Mm-hmm.
And if it sits with you innately and you feel like I'm proud of putting this piece out into the world, then you go for it.
Amazing, amazing. You know, I had no idea that the color of the next 12 months or something that comes out, and obviously experts like you sit down and review those colors. But the other question I have, Arjun, is that over the last 15, 20 years, technology has made an entry into every sector. How has technology started to change the fashion business?
So that's a very interesting question. I do believe that every aspect, the majority of aspect of our business, it relates directly to labor and to manpower, because it is not automated on machines that it can you just leave the cloth and get stitched on its own. But the beauty is technology, where used properly, particularly in the fashion business, can yield exponentially amazing results. So when technology has come in, it comes, I would look at it in three different spheres. One, of course, there's the basic technology, which is your ERP systems, which is your automated salary systems, etc. Two, and the entry of that into what we primarily would know as a semi-unorganized sector of manufacturing has created a systematic discipline with which we can run our business on a day-to-day basis. So it takes care of the basics, per se, which is actually very relevant. Funny case in point, you know, in and around where we work, there are a lot of people who have not managed to pay their salary on time. We used a specialized technology to get everyone's salary to them on time, like maybe a day before. And as a result of which, we've seen better workforce come to our unit to say, we hear you pay the salary. So technology, that's its smallest part. Then there is more fashion-centric technology in which you have certain patterns which can be graded or automatically graded in their sizes, which has been brilliant. So it saves us a lot of time and effort and manpower in-house to be able to do it, and we give it to a specialized machine. There are augmented reality versions of purchasing. So you can go and you can see a jumper, and then you can stand in front of the camera and see what you look like wearing it. It eases your decision-making process. So you kind of know, you know, you're not in for any surprises when you get the product. And then you have specialized digital printing machinery, which comes in and can do heavy duty printing on fabrics and transform these fabrics, which you would look at and say, this is absolutely plain, to something that's absolutely beautiful. Absolutely. So that's where a lot of technology has played its part. And then, of course, there is the sales side of things, where a lot of improvements in apps, for example, the app that, you know, you can stand in front of it with your arms open and it measures you up.
Wow.
That's also in its nascent stage, but it's still improving. And that will allow us to take measurements for people all around the world without having to be, you know, connected per se. And then, of course, there's improvements in fintech, which has allowed, you know, payments to be taken in and out very easily. It promotes the, because until we don't receive an advance for a couture item, we can't process it. So it sort of helped us. Whether it's UPI or whether it's just basic, even PayPal for our American customers, it works. It has really eased us into doing
well. Business. Said. And are you also looking, Arjun, at the metaverse? Because they're saying that metaverse will actually change fashion, when you will be able to do 3D, you know, customers can actually try on your clothes.
Oh, absolutely. I think going forward, that's going to be a very big aspect to it. I think right now, our target clientele and our clientele per se are very, it's very, because you're paying so much for a product, you want to see, touch, feel, and wear it to see what it looks like. And whether it's between your two favorite outfits and you want to buy one, I think that it's very brick and mortar and very hand touch feel. But I think over time, when we do see a lot of evolution in lower value items and it progresses and people trust the system, and that's when I feel like metaverse will really take off in the fashion
sector. Interesting. My next set of questions are now coming back to your two brands, Arjun Dugal and Simar Dugal. How is e-commerce? And you spoke a few minutes before ago about some foreign customers. How is e-commerce impacting your brands?
So e-commerce has been really interesting. And if we break it up, we can break it up into two different segments. E-commerce, the sales aspect, from where people buy and what people buy off of websites or third-party websites where we do stock our items. And the second is its consequence on us in the back end. Now, e-commerce has, of course, done wonders for us, whether it was during the COVID time era where we had to sustain, or whether it was on our daily platform where we just managed to make, you know, those little additional sales that always help. But its interest and also subsequently tier two and tier three cities have access to a lot of your latest collection well in time as soon as it's released. So that's been brilliant.
Mm.
But on the reverse side of things, we also understand that e-commerce is great for our mid to lower value items in terms of selling price. And that helps us literally grow and segment ourselves in a separate segment to create more verticals in that segment to provide as a choice.
Interesting. And are you seeing any difference or similarity between your urban customer and your tier two, tier three city customer?
Yes, to a considerable extent, yes. Mm. The tier two and three city customers, they're incredible, actually. Mm. The purchasing power in tier two and tier three cities is unlike you would see otherwise.
Correct.
Unexpectedly so. More so than that, they are so true to themselves. They will buy what they like, and they're so happy and comfortable with it.
Mm.
The tier one cities, of course, the urban population necessarily in that way.
Mm.
It's like, okay, will I like it? Where can I wear it? How can I wear it? There's so many more variables and checks that they have to commit. But your rural or say tier two city, tier three city customers, they're fantastic. They come in, they like something. They're like, I like this. I want to pick this up. There's another color. I want to pick this up.
Mm.
I like it. And they love it. If you give them good quality work, they're happy to wear it. And they feel, you can see the look on their face when they wear the... It's so self-fulfilling.
Fascinating. So I should have time for two more questions. My next question to you is, and I've often wondered this, that your customers are and where you're exhibiting are the high-end designers in amazing hotels, great locations by your stores. And then when it comes to production, you're moving into a very different category of locations, etc.
Yeah.
How do you, as an individual, as a designer, as a CEO, manage to move between these two extreme positions? And I don't think it happens to any other profession the way I've seen in the world of fashion.
Definitely. Definitely. You're absolutely right. Me per se, I think for different individuals, it might be different. But
correct.
For me per se, I'm very much a people's person. I love people from all sectors. Everyone has a story. And the beauty is when you sit with your tailors, when you sit with your laborers, the truth that you can see in humanity in there is unbelievable. The stories that they have, they just literally want listening here. And once you get to know them on a one-to-one basis, you understand their problems. They deliver you the quality, so you can sit with them and you're training them, understand their story, you understand their backstory. It gives you so much more in-depth into people.
Mm.
And you form that one-to-one bond with them.
Amazing.
And you sit sometimes and have lunch together, and we do team building exercises, which go a really long way. So that's with regard to the labor. And then, of course, you know, you walk out, you wear a jacket, you have a glass of champagne and you smile, because that's yes. The other end of the business.
Absolutely.
So for me, it's more about being a people's person.
Fantastic. Thank you. What a great response. And my last question, Georgian, and this is for the many, many people who will listen to our conversation. What would you say, based on your own journey as an entrepreneur, what would you say are three lessons you would want our viewers and listeners to take away?
Okay, that's that is a tough one. But to pinpoint it down to three, I think business is business.
Mm-hmm.
But what you do outside the realm of business is just as important to the success of your business.
Yeah.
For example, health being a big variable.
Mm-hmm.
The second one, I feel, for younger entrepreneurs particularly, don't be penny wise, pound foolish.
Mm.
It's something that can happen very easily.
Yeah.
And the third one is invest in good people and stay true to your vision.
Mm.
The people will help make your vision come to life.
Mm. Amazing. And on that note, Arjun, and your three amazing lessons, business is business. What you do outside is very, very important to be able to support all the great work that you're doing. Don't be penny wise, pound foolish. Very wise words indeed. And the third one you said was invest in good people, which is so critical. And very often entrepreneurs make that mistake. Thank you so much for speaking to me about your own journey, about your two brands, Arjun Dugal and Simar Dugal. And it's amazing how you are carrying forward the legacy of your mom. Thank you for talking to me about your industry, about all the challenges that you've been, about you and how well you have been able to communicate to so many different kinds of people who you interact with on a daily basis. Thank you also for talking to me about some of the challenges you have faced in building up this business. And I'm certain I'm going to see you over the years glittering in on with success all over the world. Thank you for speaking to me, and good luck to you.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure. And thank you for bringing these beautiful lessons to our homes every day. And it's a pleasure to be here. Really a pleasure to meet you and speak to you.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website, www.tbcy.in, to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.